To recap last week's reading from Rise and Shine, Truman, a psychiatrist, not a very nice guy, has a heart attack and reincarnates as a dog. He meets Alphonse the bulldog, who tells him about the importance of breathing. "Don't forget to breathe," said Alphonse as he lumbered off, was how we ended last week's audio. Easy for him to say was what Truman thought. It's not as though Alphonse had a rich history of stellar career to think about, or a published book, or the respect of his peers. Of course, there had been the usual professional jealousy from those who hadn't made a dint, much less a mark, in the field of psychiatry, those who had not attracted a full contingent of patients over the decades, many of whom had been made to wait for months before settling into the overstuffed, well-upholstered chair, custom-built by one of the furniture stores in town. And town was the operative word. City was what Truman had wanted, but his wife Sylvia had insisted they move to a smaller, less dangerous place, near to the city but not in it. It was in this safer place that they had raised their children, not that it had made much difference in the long run. As a result of their semi-rural living, Teresa had developed a love of the outdoors whereby she spent most of her waking hours gumbooting around in it. Their son Charles, called Charlie by everyone except Truman, rarely left his room except to eat or irritate. Truman's ramblings were interrupted by the smell of food, a smell that overrode the hundreds of other odors bombarding him from every direction. His concern about how he would hold a knife and fork was quickly removed by the appearance of a bowl of food set on the floor, and to add to the insult, it appeared that he would be expected to eat the unappetizing glob of mush. But as he was famished, he ate his first meal, which was surprisingly delicious, and then he fell into a deep sleep and a dream. Truman was convinced it was a dream because it was too strange to be otherwise. Seated on a raised platform covered with a silk quilt was a bulldog, Alphonse, who indicated with his paw a small bed. "Sit," he said. Truman sat. "This will be the first of several commands you will be learning from your earthly owner, the human, who mistakenly believes herself to be a superior being, little does she know. Based on your past behavior, most of which is not very commendable..." "I beg your pardon," said Truman. "Please, no interruptions," said Alphonse. "As I was saying, not very commendable. In fact, having perused the details of your most recent incarnation, I would have to say that my work is cut out for me. First, some background information. We, the canine, are part of a worldwide organization sent to educate and heal the people who appear to choose us. I say appear because it is actually we who choose them. We call it a placement. You, for example, have been placed in the home of a chronically depressed woman who needs your help. She had previously been seeing you as a patient and, based on our awareness, was, in human parlance, going nowhere fast. And so," continued Alphonse, "your job is simple. Although simple should not be confused with easy. Your job is to give unconditional love to this damaged being. In order to do that, you will have to learn what unconditional love is. That's our job, to teach you. Questions?" Truman raised his eyes and looked into those of Alphonse. Although what the bulldog had said made him uncomfortable, the eyes that looked back at him contained no judgment. "That is how you will look at your two-legged charge from now on, with acceptance, with unconditional love. Judgment and criticism, even unspoken, are received at a cellular level. Hence, your failure in the past to improve the emotional condition of many of your patients." "But," Truman searched fruitlessly for something he could say in his own defense. "Right then," said Alphonse, "your first lesson is now over. Goodbye." At which point Truman woke to the sound of weeping. Not just any weeping, weeping that he was familiar with, that he recognized. Over the years of treating hundreds of patients, he had heard many different types of crying. There were the sobbers, the wailers, the boo-hooers, the howlers, the blubberers, the silent shudderers. But this particular version belonged to someone he knew. Truman crawled onto her lap, looked up, and was treated to a surprise of stellar magnitude. This weeping belonged to the patient he'd been listening to just before he'd switched realities. Her name was Blossom, a name she'd chosen in the hope that a new name might create an improved state of mind. It hadn't worked, of course. It fell under the same category as karma and reincarnation, otherwise known as drivel. But then, in all fairness, his attempts at rational, scientifically based, psychologically sound guidance had also failed her. He had begun to wonder if some people were simply incorrigibly stuck, hopeless cases, beyond the scope of psychiatric assistance. Not that Blossom had been open to all his suggestions. He'd tried on numerous occasions to convince her to at least try an antidepressant, but no, Blossom was of the opinion that pills only covered up the symptoms and were, if not dangerous, at best a waste of time. End of discussion. Truman had not noticed that while he was thinking these thoughts, the weeping had stopped and Blossom was running her hand down his back. "You are the sweetest little dog," she said. Truman wasn't sure how to feel. Part of him was delighted by the compliment, but the other part, being reminded of his new position as a dog, was less welcome. And then he realized that the simple act of stroking a puppy had stopped Blossom's weeping in a matter of seconds. As her therapist, he had never had that level of success. Thus continued Truman's training, during which he learned a lot about dogs and their mysterious ways. Being one himself now gave him an insider's view of the species. As a human, he'd wondered why dogs were so intent on sniffing the rear ends of whomever they met. Alphonse cleared up the mystery. "The ass end is chock full of information," said Alphonse. "Its odor gives us the current state of health, what needs to be added to an inadequate diet such as grass or dirt, and it's a messaging system." "How so?" asked Truman. "Have you never wondered why dogs are constantly sniffing where other dogs have peed? As superior beings, we have no need to carry cell phones or utilize the postal system. We don't need such archaic ways of communicating. If we want to leave a message for someone, we leave it on a fire hydrant or some other location, and it's picked up by another dog who passes it on telepathically to the proper recipient. We jokingly call it P-mail." "What about barking?" said Truman. "Barking is just a less sophisticated system of communication. Tone, volume, and duration are all important components. You see, not all dogs are equally evolved. You, for example, come from a long line of ratters, a lowly origin, working class, until you were upgraded when someone in the Belgian royalty fell in love with your face. In a heartbeat, your breed had risen from the gutter and moved into the palace, a classic rags-to-riches story." "So I'm royalty," said Truman, ever on the lookout for ways to feel superior. Things were looking up. "Don't get too puffed up about it," said Alphonse. "Being royalty is often more a matter of dumb luck than anything else. Not all members of that class are superior beings. Some are complete morons. You just have to read a little history to know that."
"You read history?" asked Truman.
"Of course. Although oral history comes more naturally to me, I'm more sensitive to the nuances of the story when I hear it. We dogs are natural storytellers, and because we don't have to waste the enormous amounts of time humans do, working at jobs we don't like, earning money of which there's never enough, and then spending it in the fastest way possible in the hopes that whatever we acquire will make us happy, which it does, but only for a short time, and then it starts all over again and again and again. It's exhausting even to think about. We, the dog, have endless hours to think and, more importantly, to meditate."
"Ah, meditation. Another of Truman's pet peeves from his previous incarnation." He was becoming accustomed to the concept. As with so many other New Age woo-woo practices, meditation had found its way into the therapeutic process. Well, not into his practice. Sitting cross-legged and chanting Om or some equally inane mantra was never going to be integrated into his system. If patients were foolish enough to insist on trying it, Truman let them know that they could have at it as long as he didn't have to hear about it in a future session. Very few could resist the temptation to share their feelings about this newfound miracle. In his opinion, the whole thing was completely fraudulent. Studies to the contrary be damned. "I see you don't have a very high opinion of meditation," said Alphonse.
"I didn't say anything," said Truman.
"True, you didn't speak, but your energy spoke volumes."
"Excuse me?"
"Haven't you noticed that when I'm speaking, my lips aren't moving?" asked Alphonse.
"Of course you didn't.
And the reason you didn't notice is because you're so busy inside your own head that you often miss a lot of pretty obvious clues right in front of you. Hence the need for meditation."
It just always struck me as a waste of time," said Truman.
"I see. And spending hours of your day fighting fruitless battles inside your head, worrying, imagining the worst, etc., etc., is a better way to spend your valuable time?"
"Point taken," said Truman.
"Good. Because I'm going to teach you how to use some of your valuable time to stop thinking. That's all meditation is. Taking some deep breaths to counteract the state of panic you're in, and quieting your mind, even for a few seconds, from the B-grade movies churning within. It's not that esoteric. It's just inhale, exhale, let go. Inhale, exhale, let go. Even if you do it for a few seconds, it helps. Longer helps more. It's the first leg of the journey?" asked Truman.
"You might put it that way.
Now, next week, you, the listener, will be listening to the first leg of the Spiritual Survival Kit. Goodbye, and have a creative week."